When you use a product or service that is intuitive, that is natural, it somehow elicits that emotional connection that is hard to explain. Why is it that so few products achieve this emotional connection with its users? I'll be right back.
This is the Killer Innovations Podcast with Phil McKinney. Keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are Phil's and Phil's alone, and they don't necessarily reflect those of his past, current, or future employers. Now, here's Phil McKinney.
What is your favorite product? The one that has become part of your everyday existence. You use it every day, and you never think twice about it. You just pick it up, grab it in your hand, and use it. A product that you are so in love with that you panic when you think you've misplaced it. The product is so simple to use, you never have to look at the manual. In fact, you never looked at the manual even when you bought it, even when it was brand new. Now, when I look back on my own and I really think about it, it's kind of hard for me to come up with a list of products. For most of us, it would be easier to talk about the devices we hate because they are so hard to use and they stick in our minds as being hard to use. For example, recently moving to California, I had to go out and buy a wireless access point for my townhouse here in California. I went off, bought one, bought a new one that was not of a vendor that I've used in the past, came home, configured it to work. Now you would think, given that I'm a technologist, I'd be able to make this work very easily. I got it to work fairly easily. There was a couple little bumps in the process, but within 10 minutes I had the access point up and running. But I quickly realized that there was no way that my wife would be able to debug this, reboot it, get it working if I were out of town. So it did not pass the ease of use test from the standpoint that I could get it to work, but my wife was really going to have problems with it. So why is it that we have so many examples of bad experiences and yet so few examples of great products, truly great products? Why? Because it's easy. It's easy to make the simple complex. But it's very hard to make the complex simple. To make the complex simple, you need to push the complexity to the background, away from the customer. And to do this, you need to actually add technology. You need to add intelligence to the product so that it can take over dealing with the complexity rather than the user, such as supporting any format of audio and video so that the user doesn't have to do anything. Doesn't have to know that the browser has to have a plugin. It just automatically works. If it were that simple, then every product should be insanely simple to use. Not that fast. The what is the pushing of the complexity away from the user. The key is understanding the how. How the user falls in love with the product. Again, let's look at what you don't want to happen, that the user hates your product. What generates this hate relationship with product? Well, there are a lot of reasons. First off, and one that I find most amusing, is the fact that the designers design the product for themselves instead of the customer. Now, how many of us have sat around a table with a bunch of people who are trying to design a really killer product? And the first comment you tend to hear about is, hey, I would like that feature. If this is the product that I want, I'm building it for me, I want that feature. Now the challenge here is one that we pick up on fairly early on when you try to drive to this concept of insanely simple, is the issue of the gender gap. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm a sexist here, but hear me out on this. In the case of high technology, what we tend to find is that men like to win. If a product is difficult to use or has to do some configuration or constantly requires a little bit of fiddling, men will not give up. They will continue to fight their product. They will wrestle it to the ground until they win. It's ego. We're not going to let go until we conquer this machine. And with women, we tend to find what we call the three-strike rule. First strike, if the product doesn't work right, women tend to think, hey, I pushed the wrong button, let me try this again. Second time out, if it doesn't work, now they're scratching their head and saying, obviously, I don't understand how this product works. I need to go look at the manual or ask somebody. If that product doesn't work for the third time, you're out. You are out of the living room, you're put back into the box, you're taken back to the store, or you're relegated to the home office or den area. It's not going to be a main product that's sitting in the living room of the home. So in our case, in the case of a high technology space, we tend to now try to focus design efforts around women. If we can design products that women will accept and adopt, you've addressed the issues of simplicity and complexity. Now, I'm not trying to be degrading here. The reality is just the willingness to put up with frustration. Men have a ego that will allow them to want to overcome the frustration and win. The women just simply will avoid the frustration. And so therefore, by focusing on a gender-specific design criteria, rather than having the design team design for themselves, you will come out with a better product. Secondly, what we tend to find is reasons why, or the process that generates hate for a product, is that the design team has a lack of immersion with the customer. They really can't relate to the customer. If you're building consumer products, it's a little bit easier because we are all consumers. But if you're building a product that gets used and sold to another business that business uses to be successful, you need to immerse yourself in that business. You need to truly try to understand who that customer is. If you don't immerse yourself, how in the heck are you going to design or define the requirements for a product? You got to get into the shoes of your customers. And lastly, but also most importantly, is early validation. The question here is do you evolve the customer early enough in the design process, in the definition of the product that you're going to build? Get away from trying to go off into a vacuum and think of, you know, be worried about, oh, I can't talk to customers, it might leak, this customer might tell somebody, they'll reveal something, word will get out about this product we're working on, it's top secret. Get over it. Involve your customers early and you can avoid the hate issue around the products. So the question is, how do you correct all these errors? First off, hire yourself an anthropologist. Now I'm going to hesitate here, and everybody's probably shaking their head going, what the heck is he talking about? Yes, hire yourself an anthropologist. If you're a large company, go out and do it. If you're a small company, there are consulting companies out there that have these anthropologists working on their payroll. And actually, when I mentioned this at one of my recent speeches, I actually got a compliment from a university professor for being the one person who's helping anthropologists find roles for those degrees that they earned where they thought they would never be able to make an income. So what does it mean by going out and hiring yourself an anthropologist? First off, anthropologist studies individuals, groups, cultures. And this is what you need to really understand what is underneath the obvious facade, but what is really underneath the decisions on how those cultures being a target customer segment in your case, how they make decisions, how they rank importance in their own lives, what are the priorities for them in their lives, and then how do you align your product and technologies with them. So hire yourself an anthropologist and get them out there looking and studying your customers, gender, socioeconomic, ethnic, culture, psychographics, across the wide diversity of your customers. Don't get hung up on looking at just one customer, but the benefit of having an anthropologist and having them constantly out there is they will find subcultures, subsegments of your customers that have a common process of deciding purchases, priorities, importance, all things that are critical when you're defining a new kind of product or service. And the key here with your anthropologist is to get them engaged. Have them go out to your customers' houses. Follow them home. Many software companies picked this up in the 80s where they would literally hang around their products in the store. And if a customer picked it up, they asked for permission to follow that customer home, watch them open up the box, watch them do the install, and watch them go through the install process of installing that particular piece of software. And out of that, they learned how to make the process even easier. So get the anthropologists involved, get them engaged, follow the customers, see how the customers live, and therefore then you get that understanding that you just normally don't get unless you really understand how to look at cultures. The other is validate early and validate often. Involve the customer in the design process or even in the concept process much earlier than you ever thought possible. In some cases, you may even bring them in before you even have a clear understanding of what the product is. Now, this is not a focus group, so this is not sit behind glass. This is actually getting them sitting around in the same space with your designers, with your creative people, involving them in the brainstorming sessions to help them help you come up with that next product idea. Now, some possible ideas on how to get customers involved early is create advisory boards for your specific segments of the marketplace that you're going after. Now, advisory boards, I've said on enough of them, and some of them are very well run, and some of them are very poorly run. Now, those of you who listen to the podcast and I sit on your advisory boards, you can figure out which one you are. But the key here is not just to sit around and present and get a show of hands. But in a case of a really well-run advisory board, get them engaged. Make them feel part of the organization, just as if they were carrying a badge, just like any of your other employees. Next, to really validate early and often is to test and get feedback based on fast prototypes. Now, we talked in previous podcasts between rapid prototyping and fast prototyping. Fast prototyping is dealt with in hours and days. Rapid prototyping, typically you're talking about weeks or months before you get something back. In fact, in fast prototyping, why not have the customer actually participate in the prototyping session? Use styrofoam and glue guns and whatever, and have them help design the product. The other is get the customers involved in the alpha and beta testing. Typically, a lot of companies use internal or friendlies for the alpha, and then maybe a select few to be on the beta test. Get the customers involved early in the alpha test and use that feedback in order to drive to getting your product to be insanely simple. Now, the key here is when you're engaging or you're trying to validate early and often with the customers is don't ask with a blank piece of paper. Don't go in with a blank piece of paper and say, what is it you want or what features would make this simple? Always show and ask for a response. Show them something, whether that's a picture, a fast prototype, a drawing, whatever. Always show and ask for a response. So in this case, I'm going to give you a little example for somebody on my team. This is one person on my team who I affectionately refer to as my experimental anthropologist. They were tasked with putting together an advisory board. They searched both internal members of the organization and external, and they found professionals for the segment that we were looking at, hobbyists, young, old men, women. The total advisory board is about 15 people. This person spent over a period of about 2 days in the person's house, photographing their homes, furniture, electronics that they have, friends, families. They did a psychographic workup of the individual, lots of photographs, video of the homes, cars, places of work, interviews with them and their family members. We broke them into matching customer segments. So in this case, never have just one customer in the segment. You're trying to create an advisory board that covers the entire customer, target customer base for a given product or service. So we broke them down into target sub-segments. So hobbyist, casual, professional, heavy, whatever the segments you want to use. And we engaged them early. Face-to-face discussions, having them included in on email and bulletin boards where they can interact between advisory board sessions. And we have regular group meetings where we get them together, we feed them dinner, we actually bring in product, have them put their hands on it, record it, and make the adjustments accordingly. The key here, though, is to measure the feedback. And we're very careful about measuring the feedback. How many liked X, how many were neutral on the Y feature, and how many really hated that Z feature that we put in there that just did not work. And then we validate with non-council members to ensure that we avoid bias. Because you got to be careful with advisory boards. Council members will tend to say what they think you want to hear. They classify it as a significant honor to be on advisory boards. They don't want to be viewed as being antagonistic or difficult to work with. In some cases, they get so sucked into the idea that they're just going along with the group. So you need to make sure that you don't start drinking your own Kool-Aid here and get all wound up and patting each other on the back. You need honest feedback. So in some cases, we will take ideas to outside non-council members. And these are typically individuals who we know are going to give us brutal, honest feedback just to make sure that we're not, sniffing in our own fumes here. The key here is with council members, again, because they just get so emotionally attached. And they also take a little bit of pride of ownership. So you have to be careful. The other is that you also got to be worried about council members and council organizations and the fact that it becomes kind of a focus group version of the Stockholm Syndrome. Now, if you're not familiar with the Stockholm Syndrome, it's basically the concept of where people are held hostage for long periods of time and actually come over and become sympathetic to their captors and to their beliefs and why they do certain things. Same thing happens with focus groups or council members. People come in, they get so involved, they actually come to the other side. They may be honest and upfront early on, but they transition over and actually start basically parroting the exact same things that you said. So again, the key here is how do you create insanely simple products? And the key here is to avoid those traps, such as getting away from having the designers design the product for themselves, lack of immersion with the customer, and getting early validation. So again, to get to that insanely simple product, design for a target gender, target culture, target segment. Be very clear on who your customer is that you're targeting this solution. Immerse yourself in that customer. Truly understand how they think. What's the decision process that they want to go by? And then use early validation. Involve customers that represent those segments very, very early in the process. And listen to them. Don't fight with them. Listen to them and use those validations. And one of the key resources that I use that have helped me over this is to get an anthropologist view of what's important to your target segment. So even with all of this, you're not guaranteed success. It's not magic from the standpoint that I can give you the formula and you're absolutely going to have that product that's going to elicit that emotional attachment. The process here is that you create, then you test, then you adjust, you test again, you adjust again, you test again, you adjust again, and the process continues over and over and over again. And it takes time. But the end result is a product that is so elegant and insanely simple, your customers will have no choice but to fall in love. This week's killer question, we're going to revisit a question that we've covered in a previous podcast, but I think that has special application for this week's topic, which is creating insanely simple products. So this week's killer question is, what is it about my product that makes it hard for my customers to use? Now, this is a tough question, and be honest. What is it about my product or service that makes it hard for my customer to use? Another question that's along the same line is, what about the purchasing of my product does my customer hate? What about the purchasing of my product or service does my customer hate? Now, the point is not to get hung up on just the product. Insanely simple goes beyond product to include the entire experience. It isn't just about the user interface or the buttons or the material that you deliver as a result of a service. The point is that you need to learn at the entire value chain. You need to think about it from the standpoint of the first time that you're engaging with the company, through the purchase, through the first time you use the product, after you use the product 1,000 times to ultimately when the product is long past its life. Insanely simple. Creating that emotional attachment means that you have to think about that entire life cycle of the product. Across all these transitions, how do you design and create insanely simple products that evoke that emotional attachment? Now again, this week's killer question is, what is it about my product or service that makes it hard for my customers to use? And again, the second question, what about the purchasing of my product or service does my customer hate? Now, if you're honest with yourself and you come up with that entire list, look at that list hard and make the necessary changes. Set yourself that clear objective of only releasing the product when it is insanely simple. And success will be to the ones who can take the hard and make them simple. This week's closing thought is on perseverance. Now, during the process of creating insanely simple products, you're going to make mistakes, and it's going to take a lot longer than you ever anticipated. As I said in the opening comments, it's very easy to make the easy complex. It's very hard to make what's complex simple. So in the case of trying to drive to being your products, making your products insanely simple, you're going to make mistakes. Face it, we all do. You're going to try something and it doesn't work. I've been there, you've been there in the past. And what's the difference between just shipping a product out the door and making that product insanely simple is perseverance. You don't know what the answer is, you try it, it doesn't work out, the customers still have trouble using that product, go back to the drawing board. Be confident enough that when you do release that product, it will be successful if you make it simple. Scott Adams, the creator of the Dilbert cartoon, possibly said it the best. Creativity is allowing yourself to make mistakes. Art is knowing which ones to keep. Thanks for listening to this week's podcast and for the kind emails encouraging me to keep up the work. I know it's been a little sporadic on the podcast. We're trying to get back onto a regular schedule. I'd love to hear your feedback, so why don't you drop me an email at podcast@killerinnovations.com, or you can Skype me at phil_McKinney. Another option is that we can join our LinkedIn networks together. Feel free to send me an invite via LinkedIn to podcast@killerinnovations.com. Please make sure to note that you are a podcast listener, as I get a lot of invites. Normally, I turn most of them down. But if you are a listener to the podcast, send me an invite. I'll accept it, and then we can have our networks connected. You can also post your feedback on the show at killerinnovations.com. So any comments on the show, additional points you would like to make, or questions you might have that you want the rest of the listeners to possibly give you their thoughts on, feel free to post them under the show notes. Also, don't forget to visit the blog. I've now posting regularly to a personal blog. You can get that at philmckinney.com, or you can find a tab for it under Killer Innovations. There are show notes for the podcast. There's also the toolkit on the website now where you can look at books and creativity card decks, etc. That's been out there for quite some time, gotten some really strong positive comments. I've got a stack of books that I've been wanting to get up there and posted, so I'll try to get that updated. And also, the events tab, which shows about upcoming speaking engagements that I have. So I will be next week, the week after the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday, I will be in Bangalore, India for an event. The following week, I will be in Hong Kong for ITU. And then the week after that, I will be in Vienna, Austria, giving a keynote speech. So over the next 3 weeks, if you are in India, Hong Kong, or Vienna, drop me an email and let's see if we can't get connected while I'm on the road. Also, please remember to vote for your favorite podcast. It's the easiest way for you to say thanks for the time and effort and investments made by the producers of your favorite podcast to produce the content you enjoy. And it's these vote results that kind of reinforce that the effort is worth all the time and money that the producers put into it. If you are enjoying the Killer Innovations, then share your support by visiting killerinnovations.com and clicking on the vote button. You can also post your comments on Killer Innovations at a number of sites, including Podcast Alley, the podcast over at Yahoo, over at Apple iTunes, or any other podcast site. So feel free to spread the word. Some of you have asked for ways to educate your managers and executives on innovation, and which of my podcasts would be the ones that you should have your managers listen to. So I'm thinking of creating a CD that'll contain about 60 minutes of audio recorded specifically for managers who are not regular listeners of the podcast, but talking about the role of innovation and creativity and the impact that it can have on an organization. So it'll be a collection of some of the best material from the podcast and really something that you can simply ask someone to listen to. Give them a CD, stick it in the car, they can listen to it. The CD would be no charge if you download it yourself and burn it. Otherwise, if you're wanting me to ship you a CD, there's probably going to be a little bit of cost on it, but I haven't thought about it enough. The question for you, the listeners, are you interested? And would this be a tool you would use and find useful for you? Some of you, I know, are starting to try to create innovation groups within your organizations. It's tough trying to get your managers to agree or to understand or comprehend the benefit and the value. I know some of you have shared with them the podcast, and I've gotten strong positive feedback from both the listeners and their managers after they've listened for a while. And so I'm trying to think of a new tool that you can use to help you go out within your organizations and be that change agent to get your management team to recognize the importance of innovation. So, are you interested, and would this be a tool you would use? Drop me an email, podcast@killerinnovations.com. Also, when you send me that email, let me know what points do you think should be covered in this audio. What points do you think need to be covered to convince your management teams that they need to do something different than they're doing today? So again, drop me an email, post your feedback on the show, podcast@killerinnovations.com, or visit killerinnovations.com and post your comments on the show notes. So again, thanks for listening to the podcast. I truly do appreciate the time you take to listen to my ramblings and thoughts and ideas. And the emails and the friendships that have come from this podcast have just been extremely rewarding to me. So it's a pleasure, and I truly get a lot out of doing these podcasts. And I do thank you for the time that you take in listening every time I produce one of these and giving me your feedback and thoughts. So again, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye.